Hi, this is Ruth McCauley, returning with the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, February 18th. And we begin with some of the recent obituary notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Ralph R. Dombrowski, 93, of Decatur, retired from A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company and World War II Army Air Corps veteran, died February 11th. They give no location. Services are scheduled to be held at 10 a.m. Saturday at St. John's Lutheran Church, with visitation from 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow, Friday, at the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. A burial will take place at Graceland Cemetery with military rites. Memorial donations in Ralph's name may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church. Francis R. Fran Rush of Decatur died on Tuesday, February 16th, in Decatur. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. at St. Thomas Catholic Church on Saturday, February 20th, with visitation from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, that's tomorrow, February 19th, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home, with a prayer service at 3:30 p.m. Interment will be in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Alzheimer's Association, 2309 West White Oaks Drive, Suite E, in Springfield, Illinois, 62704, or to Mary Knoll Lay Missioners, P.O. Box 307, Mary Knoll, New York, 20545. Sandra Sandy Deerdorf, 63, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, December 12th, at Hickory Point Christian Village. A graveside service to celebrate Sandy's life will be held at noon on Friday, that's tomorrow, February 19th, at Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorial donations in Sandy's name can be made to Homeward Bound Pet Shelter. Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home is assisting the family with arrangements. Audrey Rosella Landreth Adams Nearham, 76, of Cook's Mills, Illinois, passed away at 6:04 a.m. on Tuesday, February 16th, in her home surrounded by her loving family. Visitation will be held today from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, February 18th, at the Edwards Funeral Home in Arcola. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, that's tomorrow, February 19th, at the Edwards Funeral Home. Pastor Jim Maroon will officiate. Burial will be in Rest Haven Memorial Gardens in Mattoon, Illinois. Memorial donations may be made to Sarah Bush Lincoln Hospice or to your preferred breast cancer research organization. Annie Lee Spates, 89, of Aurora, formerly of Decatur, died on Sunday, February 7th. Services celebrating her life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 20th, at the Main Street Church of the Living God, with visitation 1 hour before that service. Burial will take place at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. David Lee Johnson, 82, of Decatur, passed away at 7 p.m. Monday, February 15th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Services to celebrate David's life will begin with a visitation for family and friends at 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. on Friday, tomorrow, February 19th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 20th, at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Marrowbone Township Cemetery in Bethany, Illinois. The family is requesting memorial donations in lieu of flowers be made to the Lutheran School Association in Decatur, Illinois, where his grandchildren have and do attend. Mildred Louise Bond passed away on February 15th. Let's see, homegoing services will be held at noon on Saturday, February 20th, at the Church of the Living God, CWFF, with visitation 1 hour before the service. Burial will take place at Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. Funerals that are pending as for this date include Dennis L. Boggs, 70, of Mount Auburn, who died on Sunday, February 14th. Emma M. Boyd, 74, Bloomington, formerly of Lincoln, who died on Wednesday, February 17th. Thomas J. Larkin, Jr., 89, of Clinton, who died on Wednesday, February 17th. Richard Eugene Spencer, 48, of Bloomington, who died on Monday, February 15th. Sarah O. Vena, 78, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, February 16th. Claire M. Wells, 96, of Decatur, who died on Wednesday, February 17th. Eileen White, 66, of Lovington, who died Wednesday, February 17th. Christy A. Wilm, 37, of Springfield, formerly of Vandalia, died on Monday, February 15th. And Deborah S. Wingard, 63, of Decatur, who died on Tuesday, February 16th. Funerals which were held today on Wednesday, oh, I'm sorry, were held yesterday, Wednesday, February 18th. Well, that's confusing. This may be what happened today. I think they've said Wednesday, but it's really for Thursday, February 18th, which is today's date. Ruby Virginia Jenny Kaufman, 87, of Argenta. There was a service at 11 a.m. in the Argenta United Methodist Church. And Tamara J., or Tammy, Stout, 69, of Decatur, a service was held at 11 a.m. at the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. I turn now to the editorial page of the Decatur Herald and Review, or the opinion page, and pick up the editorial, which carries the headline, "School Leaders Should Admit Their Mistake." One of the hallmarks of good leadership is realizing when you've made a mistake and correcting it. That's what the Decatur School Board should do. No one knows why four members of the board, President Sherry Perkins, Barry A. Butts, Alita Graham, and T.J. Jackson, decided to not renew the contract of Superintendent Lisa Taylor when it expires in June 2017. No one knows why the board decided that at this time, potentially leaving the district in disarray for the next 18 months or longer. No one knows about the board's next step. No one understands the odd message that Taylor met all of the performance goals set by the board, but is being pushed out of her job. That's because those four members aren't revealing anything about a decision that was made, perhaps improperly, in a closed executive session. What we do know is this. The support for Taylor has been overwhelming. And it's clear that the four board members seriously underestimated the support the superintendent has in the community. That support includes Grow Decatur, the unions representing teachers and staff members, students, and parents. The community sentiment was summed up at Tuesday's Standing Room Only meeting by Beth Nolan, a parent and active community participant who has been involved in several education initiatives. Nolan pointed to Taylor's many accomplishments and then asked the question that is on everyone's mind. If all this good is taking place and the community thinks she's doing a good job, then why don't you, she asked, step out from behind closed doors and walk away from your personal agendas? During her not quite 2 years as superintendent, Taylor has brought a new sense of pride to Decatur schools. She has created an atmosphere of positive collaboration where issues can be discussed openly and where blame isn't assessed and credit is shared freely and widely. Taylor acknowledges the district has its issues, but also isn't afraid to boast of the accomplishments of students, faculty, and staff. Taylor has also has the backing of three school board members, Brian Hodges, Fred Spanas, and Dan Oakes. All three wore yellow to Tuesday's meeting to show as a show of support for Taylor. The community would like to understand the thinking of the four members, but so far they haven't spoken about their reasoning. They haven't addressed how this decision will improve Decatur schools, which should be the only criteria the board uses to make any decision, but especially one like this. What we hope is that one or more of the four will realize they made a mistake. The four members should see now that they seriously underestimated the positive change Taylor has brought to the district and the damage they are on the verge of doing. Many supporters have been loyal to Decatur schools, often at times when it was difficult. Taxpayers have been generous, even voting themselves a tax increase to improve the district's two high schools. That progress is being put in jeopardy by four members who have yet to explain their decision. Well, there is still time to undo this unfortunate decision that would show true leadership by the board. Okay, so that was the opinion of the Decatur Herald and Review editorial staff. Let's look at the opinions of some of their readers. And we have a letter from Sally McCarthy and Arthur with the headline, "Reporters Should Be More Positive on Illini." I am writing this to the Herald and Review to suggest that they do as Dee Brown suggests in his Twitter post and let go of the failures and resentments and look to the future with a positive attitude. Executive sports editor Mark Tupper, who calls Brown a genuine optimist, continually writes about the athletic directors that the Illini can't get and how bad it'll be when that happens instead of being optimistic and writing about the possibilities of the new hire when they are announced. Let the new athletic director come in with a positive start and not bemoan the fact that someone you thought would be great turned it down or wasn't interested in the first place. Instead of Brown's letter being designed to brace Illini Nation for a letdown, see it for what it is, a very positive letter in support of the university from one of its all-time bests. A letter signed by Sally McCarthy of Arthur. Our next letter is signed by Steve Berger of Decatur. Taxpayer wants council to consider new casino. I am a taxpayer in the city of Decatur, and I would like to ask city council members to give the casino issue some serious consideration. Former council members voted against building a mall in the city limits, many for personal reasons. That mall was built elsewhere, and is still generating revenue for the village of Forsyth. Current council members, regardless of if they like or dislike the idea of a casino, should be pursuing means of revenue that could lighten the tax burden placed on the people and businesses trying to survive here. I have a suggestion for the pastors of Decatur who are up in arms against a casino. If you were to surrender all of your tax exemptions and pay real estate taxes like all of the other property owners in the city, maybe a casino would not be needed. It's all about revenue, so pay up or shut up." Woo, little brutal there at the end. A letter by Steve Berger to the Decatur Herald and Review. It appears the Decatur Tribune editor, Paul Osborne, might be in agreement with the editors of the Decatur Herald and Review with his City Beat column. What was school board majority thinking in informal decision to not extend Superintendent Lisa Taylor's contract? A majority of the members of the board of the Decatur School District really stepped in a big pile of craziness last week. Four of the seven members unofficially indicated they will not approve extending District 61 Superintendent Lisa Taylor's contract next year. Taylor's contract expires in June of 2017, and she reportedly met all of the set goals in a recent evaluation. I would call that an A plus. Taylor was named superintendent to replace Gloria Davis in 2014, and it was a difficult time for the district. The manner in which Taylor stepped in and created a positive atmosphere came about because of her long commitment to education and working her way up through the school district. She is experienced and highly qualified to continue in that position, and I believe this district is fortunate to have her as superintendent. The right decision to extend her contract next year should fall under the category of a no-brainer because it shouldn't take a lot of thought. Taylor came to my office shortly after she was appointed superintendent to talk with me about how she felt regarding the district, and we had a great conversation. I could sense the passion and energy she had for the district at the time. She had a positive message about the students and teachers in the Decatur School District that she wanted to get out. I certainly felt extremely positive and somewhat inspired by her attitude and leadership ability. She was and is a breath of fresh air to the school district and the community. School board members, President Sherry Perkins, Alita Graham, B.A. Butts, and T.J. Jackson constitute the majority of the board against extending her contract. Board members who have publicly made comments about the great job that Taylor has done are Brian Hodges, Dan Oakes, and Fred Spanas. Many teachers, community leaders, and others came forward at Tuesday night school board meeting in MacArthur's auditorium to speak on behalf of keeping Superintendent Taylor. I have never seen that kind of positive response to a school superintendent in Decatur in all of the years I've been an editor. I would hope by the time you read this column, there has been a change of heart by at least one or all of the four members of the school board presently opposed to renewing her contract to change his or her mind before any formal public vote is taken on Taylor's contract extension. During the time Taylor has been superintendent, I have not heard or received a single negative word about the job she is doing, and believe me, that is extremely rare for this newspaper. The apparent desire on the part of four board members to get rid of Superintendent Taylor is extremely hard to understand because it doesn't make any sense. On another matter, lawsuit, fired Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney gave an exclusive interview to the Herald and Review last week in which he claimed that his termination by City Manager Tim Gleason was in retaliation for Sweeney not being willing to speak up in support of the gasoline tax plan, quote, and challenging Gleason's authority to use police resources for private use, end quote. It is my understanding that Sweeney attempted to get a meeting set up with the city council members to tell his side of the termination story, but council members were not willing to get involved in a personnel matter. As I wrote last week, they are not to have any involvement in the hiring or firing of city employees. Gleason told the media that Sweeney's firing didn't have anything to do with what Sweeney told the Daily newspaper and called Sweeney's allegations lies. Earlier this week, Sweeney filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against the City of Decatur and the city manager in Macon County Circuit Court. City Manager Gleason met with council members, one or two at a time, to avoid any violation of open meeting acts if more than two council members are present for such meetings. It is my understanding that all but one council member met with Gleason for further explanation of his action. The city manager is answerable to the council. After those meetings, four of the council members, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, Jerry Dawson, Dana Ray, and Pat McDaniel, voiced support for the city manager's position. Council members Chris Funk and Lisa Gregory did not discuss their feelings with the news media. Councilman Bill Faber did not attend the explanation meeting with Gleason, but did mention in the media that Gleason, Sweeney, and the council should sit down together to discuss the firing. Well, that sounds good. The council has no authority to directly involve itself in the hiring and firing of personnel. Sweeney's wrongful termination suit is the place where more of the story will come out. Gleason and the majority of the council apparently feel the firing was righteous and also feel confident the city is in a good position to defend itself. This could get messy, which is not going to be good for those directly involved or for the community. We're going to turn now back to the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up some lifestyle kinds of articles. This first is local from Decatur, written by Justin Kahn. Lee now doing Mohs surgery in-house. When Dr. Francis Lee first began practicing dermatology in Decatur 40 years ago, he sent skin cancer patients to the man who Mohs micrographic surgery was named after to have the procedure performed. As recently as 30 years ago, Lee's patients in Decatur would travel all the way to Madison, Wisconsin to see Dr. Frederick E. Mohs, who in the 1930s developed a technique of skin cancer surgery that is now the standard for most skin carcinoma removals. Even after Mohs retired, Lee sent patients to Mohs' disciple, Dr. Stephen Snow, in Wisconsin. He later began sending patients to Springfield for the procedure. But beginning last November, Lee, founder and medical director of Lee Institute of Skin and Laser in Decatur, began performing the procedure himself. Some of my patients think going to St. Mary's in Decatur is a long distance, so they didn't like having to go to Springfield, Lee said, laughing. Some people would refuse to go, and a lot of times it would take a long time to get them in for surgery in other places. Finally, I decided I could do it here. Lee described the difference between traditional skin cancer removal and Mohs as the difference between slicing a loaf of bread and slicing a pie. Think of it looking from above. You're seeing a thin slice of bread, or with Mohs, a whole pie, he said. There is much less chance of missing something. In traditional bread loaf surgery, a surgeon estimates how far out or deep the roots of the skin cancer go, then remove that section. If something is missed, it means another surgery. In Mohs, the surgeon removes just the visible cancer along with a thin layer of additional tissue. From that additional tissue, even thinner slices, so thin you can see through them, are taken from the bottom and complete edges, then studied under a microscope for the presence of cancer cells while the surgery is still going on. If the margins are cancer-free, the surgery is ended. If not, the additional cancer is removed. The procedure is repeated until all the margins of the final tissue sample examined are clear of cancer. Then the incision is closed. Usually, Lee said, it doesn't take more than one more removal after the initial one. If you miss it, you can go get some more, but it still ends up being much less tissue loss than the bread loaf surgery, Lee said. Michelle Milam, one of Lee's technicians, prepares the layers of skin for Lee to examine for additional cancerous cells after he's performed the initial excision. The specimen is frozen, then sliced, and placed on a microscope slide for Lee to examine. To become a technician, Milam said she had to complete 3 days of long, mind-boggling training in November, then additional training in January. She's one of our best, Lee said, smiling. Because it's more exact as far as removing all the cancerous cells, the Mohs technique has significantly improved cure rates. The 5-year cure rate for primary cancer treated by Mohs surgery is 99%, compared with 93% for conventional excision. For recurrent cancers, the 5-year cure rate with Mohs is 95%, compared to 80% with conventional excision. Mohs isn't appropriate for the treatment of all skin cancer, particularly melanoma, and because of its cost, Mohs is typically reserved for particularly large cancer cells, recurring skin cancer, or for cancers with a high risk of recurrence. Those are the only types Lee does in his office. The traditional methods, electrosurgery and bread loaf, are still the most common ways because they take less time and are easier, Lee said. Mohs is particularly effective for areas where tissue conservation is important, like the eyes and nose. Lee still refers patients who need surgery in those areas to Springfield because they often consult with plastic surgeons. Most insurance policies cover the cost of Mohs surgery, but patients should be sure to call their insurance company directly to be sure. Well, we are just about out of time for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, February 18th. This has been Ruth McCauley reading with you. I'll be back next Thursday as well, God willing. Enjoy the upcoming gorgeous weather that I read and hear we're supposed to have, with temperatures maybe up in the 60s on Saturday. Who would think in mid-February? It's been a mild winter. We all thank the Lord for that kind of blessing and hope we don't have a March that is a shocker. At any rate, as I say, enjoy the upcoming beautiful weather, the sunshine and the warmth, and I look forward to reading with you again next week. Until that time, y'all take care.